Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the Gentleman's Clinic podcast. Six South African male medical doctors on a mission to change the way in which we perceive healthcare. Today we're blessed. We have two guests in the studio with us, one here and one joining us via Zoom. Our two guests are very special. The first guest that I'd like to introduce is Tracy Zeman Jacobs, an intimacy and relationship coach that's going to discuss a bit about sex addiction with us today. And joined, not in the studio, is Dr. Heather Baylard, a GP and sexologist, who's going to weigh in on the discussion and give us some of her insights. So without further ado, welcome Tracy Zeman Jacobs.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Before we get into like the heart of the discussion, let's just find a little bit about you and what you do and the type of work that you've done and where this comes from. How did you start?
Okay. So I'm a social worker by profession.
Okay.
And then I went to get married and have babies and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And then my life took a turn. And I started on a research mission, to investigate what happens in relationships, what happens in marriages.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they kind of fall apart? What happens to the love that starts in the beginning and progression, where does it go?
Mm.
And it led me down the spiral to the final decision that most of the time, I'm not saying always, most of the time it's about sex.
Mm.
And it's not because the couple is not having sex, but it's most of the time there is an issue around either one of them battling with something around sex and connection.
Mm.
So I did my homework, having my education as a social worker and practicing, being trained as a therapist, I decided I was going to investigate this further and open my practice specializing in intimacy and relationship coaching. Intimacy, the word intimacy, a lot of people misconstrue with sex, but really intimacy is about connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was struck by the fact that sexuality is so much of a private thing.
Mm.
And it means something different to everybody.
Of course.
And my mission as well was to save marriages.
Yeah, 100%.
To find out why people get divorced. It's so much easier just to sign a piece of paper than to actually sit in the discomfort and work out what is actually going on. So, and it's been many years of learning and training and learning more and discovering more.
Yeah.
And I just love what I do. I'm passionate about people and their stories.
Can I just ask, or maybe you should listen to the other doctor
first
before? Because it's like you opened a whole can of worms, you know. And I feel like saying to them, I told you so, I told you.
Yeah,
the bottom line of everything for me is sex. So, So yeah, I told you so, guys.
Yeah. But, so look, let's introduce Dr. Heather Baylard, and then we can get into the discussion.
Yeah.
Dr. Baylard, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you started, where your journey from being a doctor to focusing on sexology began.
Thank you so much for the invitation. And I've got huge FOMO about not being in the studio.
We don't have enough microphones, unfortunately.
So I'm a general. I could share with somebody. We could be more intimate.
Ah, yes.
So I'm a general practitioner in the Winelands. And I started to study sexual medicine when I was being asked a lot of questions about sexual dysfunctions, and I didn't have answers, and there was nobody to refer to. So I did the fellow of the European Committee of Sexual Medicine exam. Mm. And it was a lot of work. And I've been working in sexual health since then. I've also just completed a diploma in chronic pain management, so I'm hoping that that will help us to also manage chronic sexual pain disorders better. And I love to talk about sex, and I love it when people like open up to me, and I think that we should be having these conversations more than we do.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah,
And
for sure.
sexuality is not something that we should be, it's not something that we should be ashamed of or hide away from. We are all sexual beings, and we should celebrate that.
No, for sure.
100%. We are all in agreement in the studio. I don't think anybody disputes
No
that.
one.
But Brendan, you had a few questions for
Yes,
the doctor.
I do also have now two for Dr. Heather as well, but I wanted to ask, what was sort of the most common issue that you found, in your work with couples, sexually speaking, that, led to divorce? Of course, not being the primary cause, but, the bottom line being, what would you say, was the most common problem or issue?
So, the majority of the cases that I see, the couples that I see, present with sexless marriages.
Sexless.
Yeah.
So
Like
no sex
totally,
in
like nothing at all.
Some can be as long as a year without sex. Some can be a few years without sex. Some can be, they can go for months and months. The other thing that I see is a lot of desire discrepancy, a lack of initiation from the one. And then, of course, there are a whole host of reasons why there is this desire discrepancy. And it's always, I always say that the couple come to me wanting to talk about sex. And as we were saying, we never actually get to the sex. Well, we not don't ever get to the sex, but it takes a long time to get actually into the ABCs of what's, of how to do. What, when, how. We talk a lot about childhood trauma. We talk about childhood experiences and how that has affected our relationships and our connections. And then that all goes into our adult relationships and our experiences as adults coming from certain families where we learn how to be in relationship from being part of these families.
Okay.
Anything, Dr. Heather, would weigh in on that? Because I'm just thinking, if you said the first thing you mentioned was that people are not actually having sex. And is that something that they come to you with as well? Doctor, you can also just butt in at any time, eh? I'm sure she can also just butt in and let us know.
I can talk for 2 hours, hours.
We're gonna
feel
have to
free,
box
feel
here.
Free.
Yeah.
This isn't our forte.
Yeah. Exactly. So
is that something
imagine.
That you actually need to get out of the patients, is that something you need to get out of them, or do you find people are willing to come and speak to you and say, "Hey, my marriage is sexless"? You mentioned that practicing in the Winelands, you didn't have answers for patients. Were they actually coming to you and saying, "These are my problems," or did you have to get it out of them?
So they were seeing me in my general practice and asking those questions. Just to add on to what Tracy has already said, couples don't communicate, and we are not taught how to communicate about sex, about sexuality, about our needs, about our desires. And so when you get a couple that have come from two different families, two different upbringings, different thoughts about sexuality, desire, sex, etc., it's, and then they can't talk about it. It's, and then it never gets spoken about. So they say that sex and money makes the world go round. But we don't talk about sex and money, and it's what breaks up a lot of relationships.
Just a
So
quick.
in clinical practice, we also see a lot of low libido or,
Sorry. I didn't want to cut you there. But I just wanted to ask about, I mean, South Africa, I've actually come to learn that we're quite a very conservative society. I actually never thought we were. But, you know, looking at myself, looking at, you know, how I was raised, sex is really not something that we speak about quite a lot. Mm. So I just want to know, actually, I wanted to pick up on something that you spoke about in terms of seeing couples and and I know you see quite a lot of black clients. Do you find it really difficult to sort of tap into those kind of discussions in sort of African couples sort of coming to see you? Is it something that you find, you know, a lot of people are actually quite easy to reach out?
Mm.
Do you think race also plays a huge role?
Or culture.
Culture, yeah.
So it's interesting because I do have a large black clientele.
Mm-hmm.
They come to me, you must remember.
Yeah.
So the fact that they are willing to reach out for help means that there's a certain expectation that they're going to be talking about sex. I find that some of the Afrikaans white couples are still tiptoeing around the words and expressions and things like that. And if we are talking culture, I mean, I have a large Indian clientele as well. It all depends, but my black clients are quite open to be talking. The men have got a different attitude. They want to know how to pleasure their partners.
Okay.
Don't we all?
Well, you know, history has shown us that black men, and in fact, my clients tell me this, so I'm not making this up, that black men are all about really wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Yeah. And the black women have just got to lie there.
There's also the issue that women report, whether it's in research or so forth, that if the woman is not being pleasured, she is the problem. There's also that aspect where the whole discussion of gender-based violence comes in and abuse and so
forth.
Don't
get me started.
And cheating, promiscuity and so forth. So there's that you were saying, there's this conception, but you actually seeing that now it's changing.
Mm.
Men, the black men actually want to learn about women. And I think that's a positive thing.
Yeah, and just to add to what he's saying, would you say that the help-seeking behavior is more common in women rather than men? Like, is it the woman that initiates the discussion and wants to come and seek the help? Or is it the man saying, I don't know how to make her happy. Mm-hmm. I want your help.
So 8 out of 10 are women.
Of course.
But believe it, I do have the 2 out of 10 men who will get onto the website looking for whatever they look for, they find me as an intimacy coach.
Mm-hmm.
The minute they see intimacy, they think sex.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Little do they know is once they meet me, we don't really look at the sex too much yet. We go all the way back to childhood.
Good.
But so that's what hooks them in.
Yeah.
You know, so they think they're going to get more sex once they've come into the session. Mm. But I must say that the reception that I get from most men has been amazing, astounding. They come in and they say, oh no, I have had a happy childhood. Until you go a little bit deeper. What I've also found is sometimes the women say, this is not for me. And the guy says, no, I'm really enjoying this. It's the first time that they're being heard and that they're being seen and that somebody actually wants to know more than, you know, more that's what's going on beneath the surface. The surface.
I saw South African men are changing. No, I'm happy about that.
We're doing very well, guys.
No, that's great. I mean, it's good to hear that at least two. I would have even thought two.
Yes,
two is a lot.
It's a huge number.
Yeah. That's a huge number if we really look at it statistically. Because you know, I think I've
got an opening tomorrow, guys.
I think we all need to consult.
Because you know, for us. we run the Gents Clinic, and a lot of men will find inquiries coming in at 2 a.m.
That's what I was going to say.
For erectile dysfunction, premature ejaculation, literally premature ejaculation, highest hits. If you go on our website stats, highest hits in the middle of the night.
2 a.m.
So guys haven't been able to perform. They feel miserable. They come and they make inquiries. How can they get help? Yeah. All of that. And it's interesting that we see a lot of those inquiries, and not as many clearly are coming to you. Not as many are saying, maybe there's an intimacy issue that I need to solve. There's no problem with the actual physical act, but I need to fix whatever issues we have as a relationship, and then maybe this will be fixed.
Yeah. That's what they don't realize. In fact, and I'm sure, Heather, you will agree with me, but the men who come to me saying, I want sex, I'm not getting enough, we're in a sexless marriage, sexless relationship. What they really are saying is that they want connection.
Yes.
That this word intimacy is misconstrued with sex, right? That they want connection, that just to be held by her, just to be with her, to be touched, to be able to touch, is the connection that they crave. That they name it as sex, that's what they want, because that's the only way they know how they're going to get to be close to her.
Guys, what you're saying is making me think of there was a patient who was almost half crying, and I wish I had those words to tell him. You know, when you get a patient who's under the age of 40 with erectile dysfunction, you know that there's more, that discussion is going to be more than just...
Especially if there's no lifestyle diseases.
When we got to the bottom of it, it was actually the fact that when he got into the bed, his wife would just turn around and expect him to put it in. And he was like, but I can't perform. And he thought he is the problem. And, you know, I approached it from the point where my thinking was that, okay, there's problems in the marriage. No, he loves his wife. He really wanted that intimacy.
Yeah.
You know, and he wasn't getting it. So now he can't get an erection anymore. It's a very... Heather, I'm not sure... Now that we're talking about couples, there's a potential marriage. Couple and marriage that's on the rocks in Equatorial Guinea.
Heather, I'm sure you've heard
about that marriage and what happened to that marriage in Equatorial Guinea, or what's happening there. I'm sure you'd want to be the counselor for that family.
Yeah, well, maybe in that culture it's acceptable to behave like that. You know, in some cultures it's acceptable for men to have liaisons outside of the marriage and other girlfriends, etc.
But that number?
Just give us some context this well.
So I haven't actually... Do you want to tell us the story?
So the way I understand it, that is a minister in Equatorial Guinea who had 400 sex tapes
that, was discovered,
that were leaked into social media. The backstory and so forth, I'm sure you know a bit more
about it.
Can you just tell us? Yeah?
So the backstory is that they're trying, the existing president of Equatorial Guinea is quite old and sort of on his way out.
Okay.
And so this minister is in line to come into power next.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I believe he's his nephew, the president's nephew or something like that.
He's the vice president
at the moment. Okay.
So there's this little bit of a fight, infighting power plays,
Okay.
Who's going to come in next? So the sex tapes were to try and discredit this minister. And, this minister's not so, he's got a bit of a history himself, of not being so kosher, not being so lekker, He was in prison in October for fraud and some kind of financial crime. And so there's a whole history. And what's happened with these tapes is that he was seen having sex with so many different women some were ministers, other ministers' wives, presidents, family members.
How is he still alive?
Yeah.
Well, he won't be for much longer if he carries on.
400, eh?
Yeah. I also read there was actually an article of one of the women that he slept with who committed suicide. I don't know how true that was.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. But, actually, going back to this guy, sorry to have just cut you there.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing, would you classify something like this as a type of sexual addiction? Is this a type of, you know, sexual pleasure? Because it seems he really enjoys recording himself. It's not like these random videos where he's just there's certain movements he does, the nipples.
I've seen one. I'm telling you.
You've seen a lot.
I've seen one.
I've also seen.
And there's a lot of what are those? GIFs or whatever.
GIFs.
There's those trending things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But do you guys think maybe his wife didn't used to play with his nipples? So
and that's what he likes.
Well, maybe it's from childhood.
Dr. Baylard can give us sort of a definition, a proper definition of sex addiction and what it constitutes.
Mm. So when we talk about addiction, so sex addiction and sexual compulsive disorder, they're very controversial kind of topics within the sexual medicine community, because some people believe that there can be addictions and other people don't. But basically, if you have an addiction, you have cravings for whatever your poison is. You get tolerance, so that means that you have to have more and more and more of it to get the hit. And there are withdrawal symptoms if you don't get your hit. So in the latest psychiatry manual, they're talking more about compulsive sexual disorder. Mm-hmm. And that is where people are not able to control themselves, even when they know it's causing harm.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the definition of a compulsion.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually it can destroy relationships. It can harm them physically. It can put them at risk for HIV, other STIs.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that makes sense, because the whole addiction might sound like actually, when you understand the definition now, it's actually a misnomer, the word addiction, because you're not having tolerance to sex. You're not getting withdrawals. Do you get withdrawals?
But I mean, if
you don't have sex for long enough.
He's not an addict.
You need to be an addict
for that. But another question I have as a follow-up to you, Dr. Baylard, is when we talk about tolerance with sex, are they now engaging in more risky sexual behavior? So maybe, you know, sleeping with multiple women or partners or unprotected sex, or trying to spice things up to a level that's not like maybe conventional. So like, oh, let's have a midget in the room and let's just do something wild because I'm tolerant of sex now. I normal sex just doesn't get me off. Is that something that's also part of that definition?
Okay, so paraphilia can definitely be part of it. And
but it isn't necessary to have like
not
that.
Very no. Okay. No. Mm. But the individuals do put themselves at more and more risk to because they can't stop themselves. They can't stop this drive to get their reward.
Is it the same as
so it's all the neurochemicals, dopamine hit. The reward centers in the brain are all like lit up.
Would you say nymphomaniac is interchangeable with sex addict? Is that the same thing?
I don't know what the proper definition of a nymphomaniac is. I understand it, that it's somebody that wants a lot of sex and likes to have a lot of sex. Also, culturally, religiously, is that a bad thing? So having a lot of sex is not a bad thing unless it's causing you harm.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think you explained it nicely how it's basically an inability to control the urges and it's affecting you societally or, you know, functionally with your relationships and all that other stuff. So it's not necessarily, like you were saying, throwing a midget in the room. Mm. That could just be a fantasy. You know? That could be something, like, actually, you're right, spicing it up.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, people are different and people love trying. Like I know of married couples who, for example, watch sex together.
They
want to watch other people have sex.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Or maybe the husband wants to watch the wife have sex with someone else.
Yes, but it's
all like consented stuff. I don't think it's an addiction. I mean,
we can so agree that those behaviors.
Wouldn't you think this minister, Equatorial Guinea minister, is also on the spectrum of a disorder? Because he knows that being caught with the minister of the army's wife is potential death, you know, but he's still going ahead and recording it. You know, he's sleeping with his relatives' wives, apparently, recording it, knowing this can be leaked, but still going ahead to fulfill that dopamine hit.
No, I don't think we know enough of what is going on. Yeah. So we don't know if he has a sex addiction or sexual compulsive disorder, or if he's a misogynist and he just hates women, or he's a sexual... a paraphilia. Yeah. We don't know what's going on. We don't know if, if he's using these women as blackmail. We don't know enough to say what is going on with him.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
You know, when I was just thinking about this whole story, you know, it made me think about men in power.
Mm.
And why men... are hungry for power.
Mm.
And I kept going back to the up-and-coming president of the United States.
Donald Trump. Yeah.
I didn't want to say it. But anyway, you know, it's so much of that kind of behavior, that thirst for, that hunger for the power. I will do anything. I will commit a crime. I'll behave like a really disgusting human being.
Mm.
I will do whatever I have to do to get to the top. So we don't know if this minister is actually doing this kind of thing as a power play and just objectifying the woman. And we don't know anything else, really.
I mean, there was a theory that came out. Because apparently there's a Twitter link.
Let Dr. Baylard wait.
Oh, sorry, Dr. Baylard, yeah?
Oh, sorry, I was just going to say he can't be like Bill Clinton and say, I didn't have sexual relations with those women.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, because now it's on camera.
It's recorded. I mean, Bill Clinton was still caught with semen, so I mean, I don't know what's worse.
Yeah, that's crazy.
How did they actually... Bill Clinton.
How did they actually catch him?
You don't know that song of Beyoncé? Monica Lewinsky did all on my blouse.
Oh.
No, he ejaculated on Monica Lewinsky's blouse, and they found the semen on her blouse.
So wait, she handed in her clothes to investigate.
I'm not sure. I think I was 6 or 7 years old when it happened. But yeah, that's how it happened. No, I was going to say with the Equatorial Guinea minister. You know, we don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
But on Twitter, there was actually a screenshot of him and his wife. And is alleged another screenshot of a sex tape that's allegedly his wife. So some guys in the comments were saying, but it makes sense to retaliate with 400 women versus... Because if you see your wife with one guy, hell no. Like many guys are going to say, I'm moving on 400 sex tapes as well. So
you think it was a revenge?
So maybe it was retaliation on the one, but again, we don't know if that's really his wife's sex tape or whatever.
True. All of this is speculation.
Yeah.
So let's get down to the facts here, right? Let's talk proper sex addiction. We have the definition.
Yeah.
Dr. Baylard, how do you manage sex addiction?
So they really are defined really under the psychiatry banner. And so these kinds of patients would be mostly managed by psychiatrists or psychotherapists. And they would do something called cognitive behavior therapy with them, or another kind of therapy is called acceptance and commitment therapy. They can be put on certain medications like the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, fluoxetine, paroxetine has been used. And these people have to want to change. So they're going to have to
Sorry to
obviously like
interrupt you,
want
Dr. Baylard.
speak.
So is it very similar to how psychiatrists generally manage like obsessive compulsive disorders? So any sort of compulsion?
Or other addictions.
Or other types of addiction, is it similar?
Compulsion.
Oh,
It is similar. And it's also a sexual compulsion disorder is comorbid as well, frequently with Axis I diagnosis, so major depressive disorders, anxiety. And also a high comorbidity with ADHD.
Okay. Makes a lot of sense,
You guys, there's a course, I think it's called SAR or SARS. What's it called?
SARS.
SARS. Yo, can you just tell them what SARS? Because I think that if you have a sex addiction and you go through a SARS course, you won't care for sex anymore.
What is SARS?
What is SARS? What does it stand for? Except for the thing that takes all our money at the end of the year.
No, that one will
definitely... But if you guys are watching, we thank you for doing a good job.
That will definitely
We're
take
not
your
making any money from this at all, so, as you were.
So I've only ever done one SARS. Some people have done more. Heather, I don't know how many you've done, but it stands for what? Sexual...
Your sexual aversion?
Aversion... Won't you go with this?
You'll just Google it quickly and check.
I know you'll just get
it's really sensitized. It's really to sensitize sex therapists to all different kinds of sexual behaviors, so that if we are exposed to that kind of thing within our consultations, that we know where we're at. We know what is safe within us and how we are potentially going to react, and can we manage that, or do we need to refer it
So it doesn't
on?
shock you.
So I always joke with my friends that I paid good money and and was forced to watch porn all weekend.
That's basically what it is.
And I have to say some of Yes. And I think that I think if you guys haven't done it, you should definitely do one. It's money w well worth spending, and it's also extremely educational on many different levels. And one of the things that really came out for me is that adults don't play enough. So we should be playing more in our sexual routines and our sexual intimacy
When you say
interactions.
playing, what do you mean by playing exactly?
Like kids play. So the dressing up, the word has gone for me now. The role playing, being silly, being childlike. I always tell my clients, like, have a pillow fight. Jump on the bed and have a pillow fight, and then then you're laughing and you're more relaxed and it's funny and
Basically, how I used to do
yeah,
it
we
when
should
you were a
play more.
teenager.
Exactly.
Something like that.
But wait, and why are we introducing this aspect? As in, as a build up, as a type of foreplay? Is this just you saying spice up the relationship, or why would you?
Yeah, I think it should be part.
And this is across the board. This is advice you'd
Part of
give to
it.
anyone, not just someone who's a well, not I suppose definitely not an addict,
No, no.
but just in
No,
any
it should
relationship,
give
that's just
everybody.
important advice.
So
Yeah,
it's not specific to
because
sex
sex
and
can be become it can become so serious, and so teen and couples, as Tracy will also tell you, that if you lighten the moment by being playful, then your defenses are down a little bit. And I also do it to help clients communicate with each other, because it takes away some of the boundaries when you start laughing and being silly
Yeah.
and
They're like,
having
and then you touch me, they're like, hey. Oh, that's actually nice.
I think what Heather's also bringing home for me is when you do the SARS. So it's a weekend. I did mine online with professional facilitators who are checking in. And you are shown very explicit, jarring, emotional, challenging, whatever it is. And you need to find out how you're actually feeling about something, whether you are grossed out, whether you think that's disgusting, whether you find that acceptable. And it's all about sex and sexuality. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And this is about, as Heather said, for us to become aware of our biases, yeah, and to become prepared for really whoever walks into the room.
Of course.
You know,
yeah,
and just becoming aware of ourselves in reaction to whatever walks into the room. As sexual educators, we need to do this, and clinicians. Mm-hmm. So, and as Heather said, what came up in the SARS was the element of play, how fetishism and kinks bring out this element of play. Mm-hmm. And we're so serious all the time around sex.
Mm-hmm.
We think it's got to be done A, B, and C in this room, in that position, with this lube and that, whatever it is. And we don't realize that we can actually mix things up a bit. Mm-hmm. That it does. We can swap roles. We challenge our thoughts and prejudices and our stereotypes around roles. Who said that men have to initiate? Who said that woman has to be on her back? You know, who said that we have to have sex in the bedroom on this, you know, try the kitchen table, like, and let's make a mess and eat food off each other's bodies. And that's the play. Yeah. Let's have a bubble bath and splash each other with water. And let's not be so darn serious about sex. Sex is fun.
Yeah.
Sex is dirty. It's messy. It's fun.
Yeah.
You know. So
I think I definitely need to do the SARS course.
Yeah.
I mean, my reactions as you're speaking are also shocking me.
Yeah.
You know, amazing. As you're like
on the table with food.
Now, would you recommend that it's not just for doctors, but anyone should go? And you should go with your partner, and you should do it together.
I'm not sure what the requirements are, and Heather will be able
to make
that more. I think
it's directed towards health. Anyone within the sexual health profession.
So it's not just for anybody.
Heather did explain, it's so that if a patient comes to you and they say to you that I have a midget on a leash who visits me on the weekend and tickles me in other places, that you don't get triggered and be like, what the hell? You know, like, oh, that's disgusting. Probably seen it in the SARS 100%. Course. Yeah. So the reason why I even brought this up is just, it was sort of like just saying that people with addiction, probably if they watch that thing, they won't care for sex anymore. Because that sort of, it makes you numb
to sex.
You see?
Well,
Sorry. No, continue. The one thing that I gauge from this course is also, its purpose is also to free the practitioner from judgment.
Yes.
To judge their patients. So I want to pose a question to both of you, and you both can answer separately. Do you feel like through the work that you've done and through going to courses like SARS, do you feel like when you sit with a couple, you give complete, unbiased, unprejudiced, unjudgmental, or do you feel like at any point maybe your own personal cultural bias comes into that? Have you ever like reflected and gone, maybe this is from my perspective here?
Or maybe
this is a two-part question. Yeah. I'm asking the first one. I'll follow up with the second one, just specific to this. So maybe, Heather, do you want to go first and then?
Yeah, so I think that with the work that we do meet a lot of interesting people, a lot of normal, unassuming people that tell us amazing, interesting, fascinating stories. I think the longer that we are in the work, the less judgmental and stuff we become, because you know, we see that the patient or the client in a clinical way. And one of our colleagues has the saying, don't yuck somebody else's yum.
Ah, okay.
Can I say?
Yes, okay, that's a nice one. Tracy, how do you...
So for me, whenever you're about to, when I am about to assume something, I get a big smack. And that keeps me on my toes all the time, remembering that there's no norm. Sometimes I'm just dying to ask a question for my own curiosity.
Yeah.
But it's got nothing to do with the issue at hand. And I've got to quell that curiosity. Yes. That it's my stuff, not the client's stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And I do believe that nothing can actually shock me anymore, really. And my attitude is exactly as Heather said. What might be your yuck is somebody else's yum. Yeah. And, you know, it's...
I think they say that at Sasha.
Not much can shock me. Yeah.
So the reason why I asked that specifically, now I'm going to aim towards Heather, right? So the reason I asked about the unbiasedness, when we were speaking about the minister of Equatorial Guinea and the situation, one of the first comments you made was, maybe that's their culture. Maybe that's...
Yeah.
Now, if I were a polygamist or a guy that has a wife and 20 girlfriends, 400 girlfriends, and we were in a consultation and you made that comment, I may feel offended. Like, how dare you say that? Because that is my culture and I do accept that. So do you think that that maybe ever has happened, or maybe you found yourself in a situation where you had to go like, oh, wait, no, that's my bias?
No, because I wouldn't, because I won't judge you for your practice. Uh-huh. That's not my role to be judgmental. I would maybe ask you how you kept it up and how you had time and how you had enough energy for all these moments. Yeah.
I see. Okay.
So would you, I just want to follow up on that. Would you actually reinforce his cultural practices of having 20 women? And
if that was his culture.
Yes. Would you reinforce it? You know, if he comes with a positive attitude, you reinforce that. And then I would say, you know, make sure that he's safe. Or would you try and... Okay, I think I'm answering the question.
Yeah.
Can I just ask one more question? My question is, after doing the SARS course, did you find that it changed your sexual behavior, sort of your own marriage?
Personally. And,
you know, your personal sex life?
Well, I did it after I was married, you know, while I was divorced. It made me curious about kinks and fetishism. To the extent that it made me think, tell me more about this fetish, this kink. Like, help me understand how this could be arousing. Is it sexually arousing? If it's not sexually arousing, then what is the point? It just made me really more curious about things and a lot more open to realize that these things are happening that I didn't know about.
Yeah.
Such an expansion of activities that we put under sexual intimacy. Because I always say, you know, sexual intimacy is the umbrella.
Yeah.
And it can start with holding hands and kissing all the way up to, and I call it the play part of sex, which is the fetishism, the kinks and the BDSM and all of that kind of stuff. But we can also just play having a bubble bath. But I'm just saying that, you know, that for me falls under the umbrella of sexual intimacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you like to also answer that question, Heather?
So I agree with Tracy. It definitely made me more curious. And especially with regards to a lot of the kink play and the rope play. I would definitely, in my personal capacity, be much more interested now in trying something like that, because it's not even necessarily, it doesn't even necessarily have to be sexual. It's about sexuality. It's about how you feel about yourself. So So yes, it would definitely did make me more curious.
I must say, look, we provide a host of services at the Gentleman's Clinic. Erectile dysfunction, testosterone replacement, premature ejaculation, smoking, cessation, weight loss, and so forth. And whether you consult, even on hair loss, you can actually find that these things affect the patient's sexuality or sexual life. All of them. Smoking affects erections. Hair loss, confidence perhaps. I can't go up to this girl, I'm balding. Yeah. Things like that. You know?
I know that struggle.
We can find sexuality or sexual health as a bottom line for all of them. And I just want to, we've learned a lot. Yeah. We've had you, you know, Tracy, Heather, we had Shazia, we had Prof. Elna McIntosh earlier on. And we learn a lot from you guys, you know, because we see these patients and we're also learning and we need to treat them with the same sensitivity and understanding as well. So as much as what, you know, we're having a nice conversation, we're absorbing, you know, like, okay, when I see that guy again, you know, and at some point we also need to refer to you. Right. We also need to know when, you know, our
it's not within your scope.
It's not within my scope anymore, you know.
And we do. I mean, obviously, certain conditions there's a direct overlap. You know, patient comes with erectile dysfunction, or premature ejaculation, or a combination, and the wife is upset because the husband can't perform. He's frantic because he's trying to figure out a solution. In the interim. And I'll just mention one case. You know, he's trying his best to make sure his wife has pleasure. Mm-hmm. So the use of toys or even a suggestion of that, then she immediately pulls back and goes like, no, you're supposed to be doing your job. So it creates a lot of friction. And sometimes that anxiety is so overbearing that whatever medication or medical intervention we're giving is not going to help the problem. So whether it be, you know, Viagra for his erections or paroxetine to make him last longer, none of that's going to work if the relationship and the intimacy is not there. And so oftentimes we have to try and exclude the medical cause and treat the medical cause. But once that's done, the only other option is to send them to someone who is more knowledgeable on these topics so that they can actually mend the intimacy issue in the relationship, which is what we found. Quick question, just back to what we were talking about, I just remembered. Would you say in terms of sex addiction, is there a disparity between men and women? Is it more men? One would assume that it's more men and less women.
Yeah, so more men. So I think they say 8 men to 2 women. And you also have to realize now that porn is much more, because porn is so much more accessible, and a lot of more women are also watching more porn, that, you know, these numbers could change.
Do you think porn has a direct effect on, you know, increased risk of sexual addiction?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then it also leads to intimacy problems. People can't have erections. They have low self-esteem. They masturbate too much and then can't have a proper erection with a partner. Their partner's never going to look like a Barbie doll. And so she can't fulfill his desires anymore. So porn is a whole topic on its own.
Can I just ask, within the world of sexual health and being sexual health practitioners, do you find a polarizing when it comes to porn? Because I find a lot support it very much.
Yeah, the way we've had sexologists come on this podcast and say, no, porn is great. Yeah. Watch porn with your partner.
For your relationship.
You know, explore that fantasy if you have that fantasy. Yes. But and the data that we've looked at shows only negative effects of porn. We currently have 20-year-old patients in our under our care who are porn addicts, basically. Or even not even meeting the definition of a porn addict, just a regular porn user, and is suffering with erectile dysfunction. Yet we've had sexologists come and say, no, explore it, and it'll be fun with your partner, and this kind of thing. So we kind of have a divide in what we're hearing. Maybe both of you can weigh in and tell us what your opinion on.
So I think everything in moderation. And definitely, so we teach sex positivity, So if you are watching so much porn that it is interfering with your quality of life in some way, then it's a problem.
So like with any addiction, right? When it starts affecting your social or occupational function, that's when you've got a problem.
Yeah. And that's why I have a little bit of a problem with the sexual compulsive behavior diagnosis, because if whatever you're doing is making your life unmanageable and causing behavioral problems like withdrawal from society, contributing to lying, cheating, isolating, that kind of thing, for me, that's an addiction. And sex addiction can be that, can be all those things. And the okay, so the body doesn't go through the withdrawals and so on, but this is what we call behavioral addictions, like food, sex, gambling, money, could be gym, work, could be any of these kinds of things that we use as a way to disassociate from ourselves and our problems and our pain and our, you know, our emotional pain. And then for me, substance abuse and substance abuse and these kinds of behavioral addictions have no real difference, except that we need to have sex, we need to eat, we need to handle money, we need to we should be looking after our bodies and going to gym. It's to what extreme and what the effect it is having on the people around us
100%.
And on ourselves.
100%.
So I'm pro-porn.
Okay.
Okay. For consenting adults and in the right environment,
pro-porn
time
in
and
terms of
place.
Consumption, or you know, people doing
Consumption.
consumption.
Consuming.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, you were qualifying what you said. You were explaining.
What, the porn?
Yes, you were
Yeah.
saying in consenting adults and
Consenting adults and also quality of porn.
Okay.
But then again, if you're both consenting to watch the most outrageous porn, and that's how you connect with each other, who am I to
So
judge?
solo porn, me watching alone in my bathroom?
Nothing wrong. For me, if it becomes unmanageable to the point that you cannot be with people without having to leave early, not go out at all because you're addicted to solo porn, because you are feeling this pain, this inside, it makes you feel better, you know, then there's a problem. But there's nothing wrong. I call it self-pleasure. What is wrong with self-pleasure? Touching your bodies and receiving pleasure. Your body is a vessel for pleasure. You know, if we abuse anything, it's a problem. If couples are using, we also talk about ethical porn. Ethical porn is different from mainstream porn in the sense that the participants in the movies or whatever it is are paid for their performances. There's no exploitation. There's consent. There is some type of meeting beforehand that we kind of get to know each other a little bit before. And they decide that, you know, they talk about, they have a conversation. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Is it okay if I do that to you? Is it okay if that I receive this? Blah, blah, blah. It's ethical porn. And it's raunchy. The other thing is that it can, you know, people look like real people. You can have really real people having real sex that can still be erotic. Okay. So I push that kind of porn because
It's more realistic.
It's more realistic. And then we're not setting ourselves up for failure and expecting our men to be this big and to last this long, and our women to have these boobs and everything shaved and
realistic.
Whatever, you know, bleached and the whole story. So
what about, I just want to ask, you guys know, you know what's a Don Juan? You'll know it's Don Juan, that movie, that award I got at Wits.
Don Juan.
Don Juan. Tell us about that award.
It's a movie called.
No, tell us about the award now that you've brought it up. You brought this up. What's Don Juan?
So there's a movie called Don Juan.
Yes, I saw
I think
it.
It's about 10 years old.
Long time ago, yeah.
Yes. In the movie, there's a famous scene where he has sex with his girlfriend, leaves the bed and goes and watches porn immediately afterwards and masturbates again. And there's that part. Now, my question is, are you also pro solo porn where it leads to a point where you actually don't enjoy your partner as much? You know, because it can get to that point where I prefer the screen, I prefer my hand, because there's a thing called death grip syndrome, because guys squeeze too much and then they don't get the same squeeze from their partner. And so they prefer the screen grip. And death grip. Yes. What would you speak on that porn and that type of behavior?
For me, I would have to look at going back to basics, really, about taking the client back to desensitizing themselves to their own touch. Going back to the idea of sensation and the five senses, slowing things down and holding back and just getting into self-pleasure, as in not necessarily for the aim to be ejaculation, but more to be around what it feels like to be in my body and receiving pleasure that I'm giving my body in different ways. And it could be through self-pleasuring with different smells, what I see, what I taste, what I touch.
Could I ask, if a young man is asking you, is porn good and can I do it alone, would you warn him of those dangers beforehand and when to know to limit and, you know, when to see danger signs and, you know?
So I'm all about...
Sorry, maybe to make it more direct, your own son, do you have son? Okay, if your own son came to you at the age of maybe 14, 15, he started to explore his sexuality and himself. He came to you and he said, what do you think, Mom? Should I watch? Should I not watch? How should I do this responsibly?
So we would have a conversation around what does he think? What does he feel? Tell me what feels good. What are his... we'd really turn it around and hear from him. What are his friends saying? What is he feeling? How does he feel about the contents, the content that he's watching? What does that evoke in him? So I'm like maybe a different kind of mom, because I would go like quite deep in. But, I'm all about consciousness and mindfulness. And I know that Heather's on the same page as me.
So Heather, you pro porn?
Well,
maybe Heather, you can weigh in and tell us.
If you're in
agreement... because I know it's sort of similar in what you guys have said. I know Heather said she does agree that responsible use is okay, like with anything. Yeah, and I think you're sort of on a similar, but I just want Heather to clarify if it's the same sentiment.
So I do have a 17-year-old son who frequently tells me that I'm giving him far too much information. And he's very open with me, and he watches porn, but he knows, you know, he understands that it's not real. And he does. He uses it to masturbate. And I also think what we need to remember is there is a drive within men's, I don't know what you would use it, physiology, for sex. And that it's the release. So it's the ejaculation with the dopamine release and all the feel-good stuff. And it can be just for stress relief. And it's not even necessarily anything that's sexual. It can be just for a release. You know, that can build up of tension. But too much masturbating on your own, we do know, leads to problems, because then the men can't interact with their partners the same.
So here's my two cents about it. I also have young boys. I worry what I'm going to teach them one day. But I'm opposed to it. And here's my... I mean, I will have the discussion. I mean,
you know, well, we have to give you guys some pushback.
Yeah.
but you know, in the age of artificial intelligence and, you know, search engine optimization and all that stuff, I don't think anyone can reasonably make some of these decisions when there's people sitting out there tailoring stuff specifically for your midget obsessions, you know,
to grab you
and just to grab you. So, I mean, he might go there just to for the release, for the tension. But then, you know, with time, they start building all these small little things and raising childhood. I mean, you know, some of these things that are being designed now are really so scary. Like for example, you look at things like ChatGPT, how it gives you such accurate answers. You know, I mean, did you have a discussion with
why you need to be building relationships with your children from very, very young. Mm. That nothing is off.
Mm.
Nothing is taboo to talk about. That I'm here, that I'm listening to you, I see you, that I'm the kind of parent who I'm going to guide you, I'm going to support you, I'm going to show you that this is dangerous and that's dangerous, but I'm also going to say I'm here to catch you if you fall. And that's, we've got to be having conversations with our children, because this chat, this AI is so scary. I am scared for my grandchildren. You know, it's like really, really, really scary. Yeah. And so be afraid, but start making connections with your children so that they know that they can come to you. You know, 100%. And keep talking to them. Don't keep like nagging them, you know, talk to me. But keep the conversation, keep the environment an open place to talk.
Yeah.
Don't shame them. Mm, try 100%. Not to shame them. It's hard work, let me tell you. I didn't get it right the first time. I think I got it right the second, maybe, and I definitely got it right the third time.
Mm.
Awesome. I think, you know, in closing, Heather, any final comments just on that?
I have a question for Heather. What's in the bag? The addiction bag.
Oh, addictive.
What do we keep? In?
Oh, yes.
Caution: contents of this bag can lead to addiction of great taste. I think it's appropriate for the topic of today's of today's podcast.
Bag comes from Nice when I was there on a sexual medicine conference.
Wow!
And my bag didn't have a gift in it, but I did buy one for a friend, and that had a very nice gifted.
It was
non-sexual gift. Unless he could use it for whipping, I guess.
You can use anything as a sexual toy.
We can. But Heather, any closing statements? Any closing statements you have for us?
Yeah, I think where we can find you. We are seeing couples. They are, or individuals. They are in distress, and they are potentially suffering in some way or another, relationship-wise, individual-wise, in their sexuality, which is so multi-layered and multifaceted.
Thank you so much, Heather, for joining us. Thank you so much, Tracy. I'm sure all the details will be available in the description. If anyone needs any assistance, whether it's helping your child navigate porn or intimacy in your relationship or trying to figure out how to mend a broken relationship, I think you two professionals are the best people to seek help from. So thank you guys for your time.
And Tracy hosts a podcast. Eh?
Tell us about your podcast.
I have a podcast. It's called Totally Not Taboo.
Yeah.
Oh.
And we talk about everything, sex and sexuality that is considered taboo.
Awesome.
So, I like to just be able to open conversations about anything, and challenge my listeners to start thinking, you know, who said? That's the question is, hang on, who said? You know, and explore that further.
Thank you so much, Tracy and Heather, for joining us today. That's it from me, Sohail Essa, signing off on another episode of the Gents Clinic podcast.
Dr. Nhlanhla Vilakazi.
Brendan Matthews.
Tracy Zeman Jacobs.
And Heather, it's your turn.
I think Heather's, Heather's there.
Okay. Heather's later.
Thank you guys for joining us on another episode of the Gentlemen Podcast. Catch you guys next week. Until then, peace. See you guys later.